Hello everyone, I'm Pierre Vallet. I'm an orchestra conductor affiliated with the Metropolitan Opera in New York. I have the great thrill and pleasure to be with my friend, the international pianist Elisabeth Somba. Hello, Elisabeth.
Hi, Pierre.
We've known each other for a very long time. We first met when we were both piano students at the Summer Piano Academy in Salzburg. We hit it off right away and developed a very strong friendship, which morphed into a musical collaboration. Elisabeth, I'm here at La Fondation Resonance in Switzerland. I see three grand pianos. It's amazing. Tell us about your life, your childhood, and what it is to be a pianist.
Pierre, all those questions in one. Okay, we'll speak about where we are and the three piano afterwards, okay?
Absolutely.
And my relation with the piano is a relation, a love relation, because the piano is really my friend, childhood friend. I remember when I was young, you know, when I'm born as a second twin. And somehow, today I know that it is a grace, but when I was very little, I didn't find my place. It was difficult for me to really take place in this world. And believe me, Pierre, the place I loved and the place was somehow cured me about this difficulty to take place, incarnation and so on, in a family where I was not really accepted, I must say.
But, even wanted.
Even wanted, and yes, and attendu, yes.
Expected, yeah.
Was to go under the piano.
Right.
My mother had a big piano.
So your mother was a pianist as well?
Yeah, oh, she was an amateur pianist, but she still played the piano with 90 years old today.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was my cachette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't
your
know.
Hiding place.
My hiding
yes.
place. Because she was playing, but she was inviting a lot of great pianists at home. Thanks to her, I've met Kempf and all of the big Gilels,
even the Russian pianist, Emil Gilels.
Yeah, yeah, he was coming home. We were living in Strasbourg, where I was born. So just to finish this, it was my house.
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered is that the potential and the power of the classical music was to speak to my heart and to give a dimension. I was in a castle. It was not just under the piano, a tiny. No, it was something who was consolating me, who was giving me hope and strength.
So you didn't know really that it was classical music per se, but you felt music in general, the sounds, the way they spoke to you, was a nourishment.
Yeah, it's nice that you say this, but somehow, for me, music is classical music. Because of that, maybe, because the l'empreinte, the first, how do you say, the first
stamp on
stamp on my soul, on my body, on my psychology, was this wonderful music. And I thank really my mother and to have given me this as a stamp.
Do you remember the first composer you related to? Do you know it was Chopin or Schumann that she played when you were so little?
No, I couldn't. I cannot say this, but believe me, Pierre, I will tell you a real story. When I was more than 20 years, I already made concerts and so on, I decided to learn the Grieg concerto.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a strange feeling when I was doing the slow movement. But such a feeling that I called my mom and I said to her, by any chance, mom, did you play the slow movement of the Grieg concerto? And she answered immediately to me. She said, yes, when I was pregnant, you and your brother, the twins, now, I was playing only this Grieg concerto. the slow movement.
That's interesting.
It's interesting because I also made, you know, a record of the berceuse, the most beautiful pieces for the babies and to culture them somehow for the mother when she's pregnant and then after when the baby is born. And I really believe that the classical music and the music, I mean, not only classical, but have a great influence and that the baby can hear it, although he's not born.
So in other words, music came to you from the belly, from when you were barely formed.
Yes, barely formed.
You were already in contact with music. Yes. That's really wonderful. When did you decide to actually pursue studying seriously? I see that you went into the conservatoire in Strasbourg and later on other places. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's true that when somebody asked me, when did you begin the piano, I said before I was born, because of what we said before. But, you know, I wanted to be a doctor also. When you remember the teacher at school asked us, what do you want to be when you will be an adult? And I was always saying, pianist or doctor. And I'm so grateful in my life because I could join both of them because somehow I really believe that the musician, the pianist are doctor of the soul somehow.
Yeah. You know, when I listen to you play the piano, it's always incredible to me that I sense in my body a real change, a real transformation. And so I can see the healing power that you would have had as a doctor. But I'm glad you stayed a pianist.
Thank you, Pierre.
So how was your experience at the Conservatoire? Did you like being there?
I remember that my father, who was a great intellectual and he was a functionary.
Yeah, Werner Sombart, right?
Werner Sombart is my grandfather, the economist, but my father was functionary at the Council of Europe in Strasbourg. That's why we were born there. And he, of course, wanted to have a daughter who made university and so on. And when I told him, and I remember my teacher, my piano teacher, says to them, my parents, she will be a pianist. And my father said, no, it can be a hobby. And I was young, I was 8 years, and I did not know what was a hobby, but I could feel that it was not the right word. And I came to the salon and I said, no, it's going to be my life and not a hobby. So, yeah, I did the normal study in the Strasbourg Conservatory. Strasbourg is a very beautiful city. And I hope all the people who hear me today can one day go there and see the cathedral because it's magnificent. And then I went to Paris. But, you know, we all have a person in our family which is the spiritual person who accompany you and make you feel, how can I say, make you feel, or not make you feel, but give you all what you need without telling it.
Yeah, so show you your purpose in
some ways. Was my grandmother. Uh-huh. And she was living in Paris. And I was 10 years old and I was I'll be chosen from the conservatory in Strasbourg to make a competition in Paris. And I was very happy because I knew my grandmother would be there and she was waiting for me at the station in Paris. I was doing this traveling in the train all alone. And we went there, it was the Bach competition, and we were playing behind the curtain. It was all so strange, and I was the number 7. And this number was very important
very
then
important
for
in
all
your
my life.
Yes.
And for I don't know which reason, I won the first prize. But I was not happy, you know, because I saw all those other girls and boys who played very wonderfully and they were crying and, oh my God, I knew on that day that competition in music is not true. Mm. We don't have to do that. That's why, much later on, I created a school without competition.
Yeah, we'll speak about that later. Yeah. It's amazing, the actual curses.
So I went back after this first competition I won in Paris, and then I finished the conservatory there with 14, and I decided to go to Paris to live with my grandmother and continue there. It was very, very difficult, you know, because my father, he went in my room and he said, "Why don't you go anymore to school?" And I said to him, "Because I have no time to go to school." And he said to me, "You will be in my office tonight." And when my father said this, it was always for great purpose, and we were all afraid. But I was not afraid. And I remember I was 14, 13 or 14. And I went in his office at home. He had lots of books, and it was very terrifying to get there. And I came with all my music scores, and also harmony, because I had to do the harmony, contrapunto, chamber music. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I put all that on his desk, and I said to him, "Look, this is all what I have to do, and more, I have to practice at least 3 or 4 hours the piano. Uh-huh. So how do you imagine me going to school?"
What did he say?
And he said to me, "Okay, you will sign a paper now, in front of me. We still have this paper. Me, Soussigné, Elisabeth, Samba have decided not to go and to do my baccalaureate.
Regular studies.
Yeah. Regular study against my father." Uh-huh. I wrote this paper. I signed it. He looked at it and he said, "There is a fault." Mm-hmm. I said, "No, that's not a fault." And he looked at me, and I remember this look, because it was like, "I can't discuss with this girl. I can't make it." And he accepted it. So when at 14, 15, yeah, I said to them, "I'm not going back to Strasbourg, I'll stay in Paris and continue." And my grandmother there, she was absolutely unbelievable, because she accepted me. It was not so easy for her, and that was a very big move. Why it was big move? Because, you know, Pierre, you know me so well, I have no confidence in me. But sometimes when I look at my life, those are steps where you have to have somehow confidence in you to decide that. So it's always been like that in my life. I have the feeling I cannot, but somebody in me knows and make me do the
thing. So you're saying that actually you may not have had confidence, but a great deal of strength and also purpose. Because once you completed your studies in Paris, you then met an incredible pianist called Bruno Leonardo Gelber, and that started a new adventure really far away from Strasbourg.
Yes, and far away from all what I could have had imagined, because he was my pianist. I mean, I could have, and I did it, walk for kilometers to hear him. And one day he was playing in Strasbourg, and my mother phoned me and she said, "Come back for this concert because you can meet him." Oh my God. So I went back to Strasbourg, and I was at the concert, and then there was a dinner. Oh my God, when I remember this. And he looked at me, Bruno Gelber, he said, "I've already seen you." I said, "Yes, of course, because I come to a lot of your concerts." And then it was 12 in the night after the dinner. He looked at me and he said to me, "Okay, play something for me now." Mm-hmm. And you know, Pierre, there are moments in your life when you have the feeling that the light is arriving, and or the hand is arriving, and you see, if you don't take it now, you will never have it back.
Yeah,
you know?
The hand of God is suddenly active.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. And I went to the piano. I remember I played for him the barcarolle. How?
By Chopin, right?
Yes, by Chopin. How can I dare to play this for him? But you know, you are a bit inconscient when you have 15 years, 16 years. And I finished the Barcarolle. He looked at me and he said, do you have something else to play? I said, yes, I'm playing Van der Fantasie von Schubert.
Schubert, yeah.
Which is a piece impossible to play. But I did it. And at the end of my playing, he said, you have what I cannot teach you, but you cannot continue like this because you are burning the candle from the two...
From both ends.
From both ends.
Wow.
I have to give you the technique.
The fundamental.
The fundamental to be able to share this sensibility. So I came back home. It was like in a dream.
Yeah.
And the next day... I saw him and he proposed me to go to Argentina and to work with him and also his mother. And I say yes.
So the teaching is the same teaching that Martha Argerich received, right?
Yes, and Barenboim.
And
also.
Barenboim as well.
It is the technique of Scaramuzza.
Scaramuzza.
That was a great pianist, Italian, and he had a pedagogy very special. It's an old program, I mean, really.
I see.
And I had to begin everything from the beginning. For the first 3 months in Argentina, I played Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, this work. But also this, Pierre, can you imagine me... I was claustrophobic. I never took the plane in my life. I had no money to go there. And there, the hand of God.
The hand of God came back.
Came back. I was in Paris, believe me, in a restaurant, in a cafe. And I was thinking, oh my God, where will I find this money to take this plane? Because he said to me, you're not going to pay for the lessons.
That was amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing, yeah. And I will find for you a place where you can live. It's an old woman, Argentinian woman, and she already had other pianists like you coming for months, because I was there almost a year. And in this cafe, I remember, I met a person who helped me, who gave me a bourse.
A scholarship.
A scholarship.
A stipend, yeah.
To go there. Can you imagine? I was saying to myself, nobody will believe me apart from my grandmother. And that's how I went there.
And you stayed how long?
Almost a year.
Almost a year. Yeah. So you're there,
no,
you learned
months.
Spanish because you speak very good Spanish, right?
Yeah, that's come from my grandfather, a Russian, Georgian. My grandfather said... Because I was telling him, because I was living with them in Paris, and I said to him, why do you write your book about the revolution, Georgian Revolution, in French? And he said to me, when you arrive in a country, qui t'accueille,
who welcomes you,
who welcomes you, who gives you everything, the first thing to show them your gratitude is to speak their language. So for us, it was... our education.
Right.
I was in Germany, I had to play, I have to learn German. In Italy, the same, and in Spain, in Argentina, it was the same. In 2 months, I was speaking Spanish. It was very important. Yeah.
And then after that, you actually went where?
From Spain, I came back, and then this is something I want to say to the people, because I love so much the people. I want to say to them, don't be afraid to choose your teacher. If there is somebody you really like, me, Bruno Gelber, for instance, go there, go to him or to her, and choose the person who really impacts you and make everything possible to study with them. So I wanted to know about the tradition in the classical music in Vienna, because they have the base, you know, they know how to play Bach and Mozart and Schubert and Beethoven and why. It's the old past, you know, and the old tradition they can give you. And there, another God hands. Believe me, I met a woman. She was so unbelievable. She was in the Vienna Academy. And after all what I did physically in Argentina, technically with my hands and arm and everything, I arrive in her, dans sa salle.
Studio.
The studio. And she said to me, yes, very good, but you know, one doesn't play the piano with the finger, but with the diaphragm.
Uh-huh.
What? I said, whatever, this is new now. And for 3 months, I was lying on the floor, trying to get the contact with my diaphragm. I didn't know even that we have a diaphragm and what it is, and how we can use it as a strength, like the Chinese, you know, they said the qi, no?
The qi, yeah.
The qi, yeah? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, yeah. And she said to me, you have to play with this. Mm. The movement has to be the consequence of the respiration.
So maybe that's why your sound is so deep and so unique. Do you feel that helped you?
Yes, it was a revolution for me. Because for me, before, in the conservatory, but also with Bruno Gelber, all this was very important. But the technique was something, the interpretation was another thing, and how to put them together and maybe to breathe all that was not... I could not imagine... That we have to, on doit devenir, we have to become the sound, we have to become the instrument, we have to make one. Mm-hmm. And for that we have to know who we are, mm-hmm. not only psychologically, but also physically.
Physically, yeah.
Yeah.
And how breath really impacts the sound.
Because I discovered that, you know, deciding, when you decide to breathe, you really decide to live consciously.
Mm, 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 mm.
Yeah.
And so you developed your music, and then there was another extraordinary meeting with a great conductor called Sergiu Celibidache, a Romanian conductor, really incredible. And there you learned to organize, I suppose, all of that inner world.
Yes, but that came just before I had the experience of Peter Feuchtwanger in London.
Uh-huh.
And we were together there,
yes,
you remember?
You took me there.
Yeah.
You forced me to go and study with him in London. Yeah.
Yeah, but this was such an experience, because after the first experience in Argentina, where I had really to form the hand, the muscles of them, then Vienna, no, you don't play with your finger, but with your diaphragm. Then I arrive in London, and this genius, Peter Feuchtwanger, he said to me, no. You don't play with the finger, you have to invent completely all the fingers, that's
pattern, the fingering patterns, you need to be free of it. I remember
you have
that.
To be free of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you remember, tell us it, because you did the experience, we had to play for those who know the piano, do, re, mi, fa, sol, not anymore with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but the contrary, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, so everything was completely...
And I remember we had to depress a key silently for months before we could actually move on to something else, yeah.
Exactly.
And that gave you a sense of freedom, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely, because the most important things always... not only in life, but also in music, is not to put anything in an etiquette.
Right.
In a concept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to have the concept. You know, Celibidache was saying, music is transcendence of the knowing. Yeah,
I
but
see,
to transcend the knowing, you have to have the knowing.
Wow.
But afterwards, you have to get free of it.
I'd love to speak much more about this experience with Celibidache, because it really formed not only your playing, organized it, but also influenced your teaching. I look forward to speaking about this on our next podcast.
Yes,
thank you so much.
You cannot imagine what I'm going to tell you about that.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.